One of the reasons we get to try too hard, and this is really what the basis of it is that the teacher sets, in a sense, a trap for you. I say, Judy, think, have an image, that now work. What happens is you then try to work literally according to the image, and I, as I keep making suggestions to you to try to get you to be a little closer and to succeed a little bit more in achieving the exercise, I'm actually leading you into trying too hard. So what I have to do to remind you now is this, that my job is to keep saying these different, is to keep making these different suggestions to you. But your job is to behave, you hear it for the first time, and we both know that you're not going to do anything about it. See, that we both know that you're not expected to succeed in that moment. See, that's your job, is to just take the thought and then, in a sense, forget about it. And my job is to keep giving you the thoughts. So do you see how when we talk about it that way, then it really sets up a different dynamic in the class. I'm repeating and repeating and giving you ideas for suggestions which will one day happen well for you. And you are not falling into the trap of trying to please me or to actually do what I said. Mm-hmm. Okay. So when I talk about that path, the first several times that I say it to you, it is as though we're in our Indian moccasins and we're making a little footpath from, let us say, the brain, which heard the suggestion, down to the part of the body that is supposed to respond. Nothing is going to happen because it's too new. Once you have taken that thought just once, I mean, you just go over the path once to go from the campsite to the hunting place, right? You don't go back and forth over it. Exactly. See, we would do that. We would go back and forth. That's not the way it's done. You just sort of go, and each time you take that thought, one day the joy hinge, for example, will pick up the message. One day there will be a clear path from the brain to that part of the body, and with just that same delicate light thought, you will be able to, your body will respond to the suggestion. Make sense? Mm-hmm. So it's the same thing as it was with me when I stopped trying to reach the high pitch. So it's the same thing with you when you just take an image and very lightly, in a shimmering way, it hovers somewhere on the brain or even outside of the skull somewhere. It just kind of hovers and you go about saying the words. What does saying the words mean? When I say, all right, let the image work for you, don't you work for it. Okay? So too with saying the words. When you had that lip saver in your mouth, in a sense, you were just letting the lip saver do the work. Isn't that so? It was there, and whatever happened, oh, you winked, or you took a cute pose, or whatever. But it was the lip saver you were serving. See, you weren't acting on top of the lip saver. That was enough. And when you saw your pictures, or the guy knew what he had taken, then you saw how much you had done without doing all that much. When I say sometimes, let the words work for you, it means that you don't have to impose a kind of expression on the words or acting on the words. You don't have to do that. You just say the words. Now, when I just say the words, I say it built on the technique of learning, knowing how to extend a vowel, knowing that a diphthong is different from a simple one syllable. I know how to let a consonant take its full color value, and I know really how, through the simplest techniques of oral reading, how to have inflection. You know, the sentence goes up, the sentence goes down. I know how to pause. I know how to sustain a pause. I'll go up. And then I'll continue. These are all techniques. Once you know those techniques, like a ballet dancer knows to work at the bar, then you do nothing about it. You let the whatever thought is implied in the sentence, you just say that, and those thoughts will use the different techniques. Does that make any sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, you at this moment are not ready to let the sentence speak.
Oh, I'm still working on breath and tongue.
But you're also working on that list of words that I gave you.
I have it.
Yeah. See, what I mean is that's oral reading.
Right.
Is when you can't say garbage and oracle and really know that they are different words. That's what you see. I would reach the word garbage, oracle. I would immediately pick up that they were different. At this point in your work, oftentimes your work is all the words are exactly the same. So I have to make suggestions to you. You have to somehow hear them eventually. And somewhere you have to let the color of each word move into the sentence. And then, after a while, you can just say the sentence and no acting. Make sense?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, so now one of the techniques is to go through the list of words and see whether they can,
We want to work on tongue exercises with them.
With them?
Mm-hmm.
Ah, yes, it's because what we noticed that when your tongue is stiff, you cannot speak with a sensual, you can't allow, sensuality doesn't come in to the word because the tongue is stiff, so it's really like a tight muscle. Judy, before we go to the tongue, I'm glad you. One of the reasons I didn't think tongue today was that you came in and there was no graininess in your voice this morning. Now.
I also did something that wasn't an assignment, but I did it anyway.
Yeah.
I did it a few days ago. I wrote because for the first time in my life, I think, this last 10 days, I had off, didn't work.
Isn't that something?
And I didn't worry about not working because I had plenty of work and the money's coming in and I have plenty of work starting this coming week. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't worry, I just sort of roamed around.
Yes.
But, anyway, I wrote
because
I got
it.
So disturbed.
Okay. Oh. No, you should have enjoyed it.
Well, I did, but I wrote two short things first, and then I
wrote. The teacher has put on her eyeglasses.
How nice. Cute.
What am I doing? Okay, let's see what this says. Breathing can only get it right, quotation, when concentration... I didn't want you to write, with Karen. With concentrating that when swimming, breathing is easy as long as I swim slowly. If I go faster, breathing is hard, tight. Sometimes it hurts. I do know it will get better with practice. Not being able to do it, I look at it as failure because I believe I can do anything right now. And when I can't, I feel defeat in some way. It's very serious what you just said.
I know.
Yeah. I even sometimes think I'm less of a person. I know all about the inner self, but it doesn't work for me that way yet. That takes a long time. It's true. I do know that I've done a lot, but I just want to be able to do whatever I want, whenever I want to do it. That sounds childish as I write it, but I know it's true. Judy, we are all, children of, the code of achievement and success. We are all. I mean, it's absolutely the middle class way, and I don't know anyone who doesn't suffer it. And I know that for me, it took a lot of trauma, personal, I might say tragedy, at least at the time, in my life, to get me to sort of sit down, mostly in this chair, and realize that, see, for me, I can say this to you, you won't believe it, but at least I knew it, that nothing matters or nothing adds up to anything. You see, Now, it's the only way, I was a child just like you, you know, with the same passion to make it and to do it and to get it right and to do everything. But something happened in my life, and I got old enough, I mean, I had enough decades to see that nothing really mattered. And once that happened, and it's nothing you can make yourself believe, it's something that comes to you, really, and it comes to you generally through pain. Through once you believe that, and give, and then once you believe it, you can't help but give up that wanting it to be right, or accepting yourself as who you are, and with the validity to eat and sleep and walk, you know, take a walk. Once you believe that, and you begin to work through pleasure, through just the sheer pleasure of solving certain kinds of problems. It's the same as doing a crossword puzzle or a jigsaw. I could be working on a jigsaw puzzle just the same way that I'm trying to write the play. One is the same as the other. It really is. But I couldn't have believed that in my early years when I was your age. Now, the thing I think that you have to do is to keep waiting to find whatever it is that will help you to believe it. Because it is true. And what you know in yourself, you know that you want. At the same time you know it isn't right, it isn't real, it isn't true, it isn't zen, it isn't beautiful, it isn't blue. It doesn't matter. You want it, and there's no and you can't stop wanting it. Something may or may not happen in your life that will turn it for you, that will really teach you that. And when it does, it is a liberation. It is, because then you move into your work in a different way. You love your work in a different way, and you do it in a different way, and you have different, you don't have expectations of it. It really is the sheer pleasure of doing it. And that's very unusual. See, I only came to it, as I say, by accident. So there's no technique that I can give you for that. I mean, I talk technique all the time. There is no technique for that. And I think the only technique, the only thing that brings it on is suffering or enlightenment. And I don't believe the yogis, you know, not the Indian guys, but the American young people who follow the yogis and talk it, that's bullshit. I don't believe them for one minute. There are very few of those yogi American kids who, you know, wear helmets on their things, who are really inside true. They are all achieving. And they're achieving by wearing their hat, their Swami hat and whatever. So it has nothing to do with even thinking of it all day long, really. So just live with it. Live with knowing it. And knowing it about yourself and saying it is, in a sense, as true as you can be this moment. And I think that when you bring that much out of yourself and face it, to me, that's one third of the way.
I felt better after I wrote that down.
Yeah.
And it's bothering me.
That's right, because you're trying to deny it on one hand, because, you know, it's not nice. You're trying to deny it on the one hand, and how can you on the other hand? So you may as well say it, and the minute you say it, you'll say, well, you know, it's not all that hot, it's not all that great a thing. And then say, but that's the way it is. And we don't know when that next one third will happen in your life, but it will. So, okay, I go for that. Relaxing, not filling every minute with things to do. This is really why I felt like I had to write. I've had time off during the last 2 weeks to do nothing, to let my mind wander while I've been painting and sewing. Now I finally sort of realize why I keep too busy. I'm a survivor. Those are my strongest impulses. Yes, you are. Okay. I'm very good at it too.
Wow.
I know. When I don't keep myself busy, I cry. All the time, for no reason, no obvious reason. That's very serious.
I
just cry, the tears well up all the time. Since I can't control those feelings and the crying, I get scared because I don't think I really want to know why I'm crying. So I keep myself structured and busy, then I don't have to deal with it. Now that I am already crying, I decided to see if I could figure out why. I know I made the most drastic changes in my life from grade school to junior high to high school. I went from quiet, shy, well-behaved child to very wild and unruly. I did some things for which I would have been arrested if caught. By high school, I was too busy with a million activities to even think about getting into trouble. So by high school, I had developed the habits of protection I'm still using. So why do I cry? The biggest thing that happened to me then was my parents' divorce. Age 12, witness in court. I didn't know that. My father called me alien.
A liar.
My father called me a liar in front of all. My mom moved out after she left the state. I still can't say the words I love you to either of them, but I do care about them deeply and do lots of things for them, and they help me when I need it. Somehow, the words won't come out, and I can't hug them. I can't even tell if that's what makes them cry. On the conscious level, that's not it, but I don't know what is. What do you think about that?
Let's see. I've at least figured out why I keep myself busy. I know that's why. Because there's something that I don't want to deal with.
Yes. Yeah. You know, Judy, one of my former students came to visit me. I think it was on Thursday. I don't know, Wednesday or Thursday. Wednesday. And she has been through a great deal. And she was talking to me about that locked-in feeling, that feeling that that she locked away from the time she was 8 years old. And hers is also very specific, like yours. It was...
I think, because I'm not sure that's what it is, except that's the biggest thing that happened to my life.
Yeah, and hers too. It was a death in her family, and she was 8 and very close to. And she was not able to mourn that. So she never had a chance to, but she locked it away just as you did. And her body used to be like cement up around the chest. It was, and her shoulders were like stone. And it is, she's breaking out of it. No, and really breaking out is like breaking cement to come out. And having known her, must be 15 years now, I found out the suffering just the other day. 15 years, she never spoke it. So all I can say is, she's very smart. She said, what is it that happens in our childhood that diverts us from our destiny, now, from what we know when we're children? What thing is it that comes between us and it, like you say, that locks us off from it? And then in a way you sort of spend your life either trying to break out of it or locking further and further away. I think one thing about acting, our kind of acting, is that it does bring you to openness, to healthiness, because you can't act. See, the way we act when we work from the body and the voice, and the body and the voice retain all suffering. It retains everything in our life is there. So we're bound to come to face with it.
Yeah.
And just like, you
have to.
Exactly. Because it's there in the body. When you first came and, you know, we talked about that busyness, and we said, you've got to allow some little portions of time. That was because the acting required it.
Yeah.
You were so busy that you didn't have a chance to allow thoughts to float up into the mind. That then leads to this kind of self-knowledge. And this is very, very deep. And I don't know what it is.
No, I've neither.
Yeah.
Maybe, I don't know.
But I think...
Maybe someday I will, maybe
I think
someday I won't.
That, exactly. But I do think, just as in the previous paragraph, I think that these thoughts came to you during this week of not having to work so hard and not run around. To me, this is good. See, it's very unsettling.
Yes.
But it's good.
Yeah, at least knowing why I do that to myself
mm-hmm.
helps.
Mm-hmm. If that's why you're doing it. Remember we said at one time, we don't really know. You can't know what the motives are. But one thing can happen is that by laying them out, you know, bringing them out on paper or laying them out of yourself into space between us and acknowledging them, something in the system, something in the body, something in your whole self has become aware of that now and may make the change. Mm-hmm. It may say to you that you no longer need to cry. Mm-hmm. You know? And you may get to believe that. And you may one day say, you know, I'm over that. I don't know when it happened, I don't know how, but I don't need to do it anymore. Again, this is like acting. When you have technique, that means you understand the concept of saying a sentence. You understand what techniques are involved in that. Then what happens is you just let the sentence say itself, in a way. Isn't that what you say? You just sort of provide the body, you know, the breath and the face, and the sentence moves out by itself. It has to. It just has to. That's why we speak. You know, things move out. So too, I think, psychological corrections. Sometimes, when suddenly you have an insight, as you seem to, sometimes that's all you need. And you no longer have to do anything about it. That this mechanism which adjusts your blood pressure and your heartbeat and all that also adjusts thought, doesn't it? I mean, thought may be the easiest of all the adjustments. So it may very well be that something in your system will adjust that action which is no longer necessary. How does that feel? So do nothing, is what I'm saying, about it.
Well, there's nothing we can do.
That's right. There's nothing we can do. And so, I mean, this, in a way, like the acting really taught us about that, about what we just said. But this also should teach us about acting.
Yeah, it's somehow, I guess, I had to finally try to figure out why I mm-hmm. ever did that to myself, made myself busy every second of the day until
mm-hmm.
I would collapse.
Well, maybe it's a combination of a lot of things. Maybe it's also wanting to be a winner and to, you know, not just
well, yeah,
to survive. That's right, you know, so that, like, wanting to make it, wanting to be successful, in addition
right.
to covering up that childhood trauma.
Mm-hmm. But see, the first part, I think, was easier. You know, I just stopped scheduling myself so much,
mm-hmm.
took some of that away, but then when I finally was free for a while, then all of a sudden all this stuff started happening nowhere.
But Judy, why couldn't you just cry until you had no more left to cry? You know, there is a point why don't you cry?
I do, and then it kind of goes away. And
then it comes
again.
Back. Why not? Let it cry. Why not let it come back again?
It just does.
Well, let it, is what I'm saying. What I'm saying is, don't keep busy. You know, this is what I've always said. I don't want you to be so busy. It's wonderful and important to not be busy.
Right.
Just as this last week, you didn't have all that running around to do. And it opened a lot of spaces
mm-hmm.
that frightened you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't want you to be busy, and if you cry, I would like you to cry, no matter how much crying you do. And if you think that you're just not going to stop, keep crying.
Yeah.
okay? Mm-hmm. I think so. That stuff has got to get cried out.
Yeah, something has to happen.
You know, I have two things that come to my mind. One, a very dear Russian lady told me years ago, in 1971, when my marriage was ended, she said she was absolutely passionately in love with her first husband. And his name was something like Sergei, and they lived in Paris, and he was the son of a bank, you know, his family were bankers. So can you imagine bankers in Paris in the 20s? And I did see a photograph of him, and he was unbelievably beautiful. And he wore riding breeches, and he wore a paisley turban. So, I mean, you can imagine what this man was like. And he adored her and put her on the stage because she was an actress and he produced plays for her. Everything. And he died at a very young age. And she was a good deal younger than he, you know, 15 years younger, whatever. And she was starring in a play in London. I think she was in the Two Mrs. Carrolls. And you know, she was really an international star. She wrote the play Dark Eyes, if you remember, that play of the two Russians in it. She was a friend of Balanchine and all his wives. And you know, she was of Russian artistic aristocracy. She said she was in the play, she couldn't wait for the play to be over. She was suffering very much. Finally, the play was over. See, she couldn't cry until the play was over. And she went to Switzerland and rented a little room in Pension. And she stayed in her room and she cried. And she cried and she cried and she cried. And every day she would come out. There was one place where she would go to lunch. And the waiters, they knew her, and they saw from the look on her face whether they could talk to her that day or not. So some days she would just come and eat, and then she would go back, and she would cry. And other days she would come, and they knew that they could exchange a few words with her. She would go back, and she cried. She cried, she said, and one day she stopped crying. And it took a long time. It was a month. It was more than, I don't know how many weeks, she stayed in Switzerland to cry. And when she told me that, I didn't cry when my husband left me. I thought I was supposed to be brave and strong, you know, and survive. So that day I went, I remember I had to go to the movie to see some movie, and I sat in this dinky movie house in Valencia.
I'm getting the picture.
You're getting the picture? And I started to cry, and I couldn't stop. She had somehow given me permission to cry. It was very important. And I cried a lot after that. And I think that helped. I now let myself cry when something happens, because crying gets it out of the body. You see, when you cry, hear that? See, that's sending it out of the body. If you don't cry, you keep it in the body. That's why men suffer more sometimes, because they don't have access to actual crying. Actual crying is a physical process, and it's very important. It's a cleansing. So you mustn't be the one to decide how long you're going to cry. Judy.
No.
See, you can't decide. Well, gee,
it's like dribbling out now. I didn't.
Exactly. But let it dribble out. Let it dribble. Let it pour.
Well, it doesn't pour.
Yeah.
Maybe it will. But it doesn't now.
Okay. Let it do that. Mm-hmm. I also, one of my former students, I said. Phone. I said, has it been a good week? Are you well? I'm happy. She said, well, I'm so happy I cried. And I understood that. So in a way, you know, you are happy right now, Judy. Your work is going well.
Oh, I am.
And your acting is going well. And your fellow is going to come out. You know, and the excitement of that. there is something about that kind of happiness, which is sort of bordering close into ecstasy.
It's true.
That makes you cry. Yeah. So I do think, let it now, let what comes come, and try not to decide whether it's something that should come or shouldn't. Also very hard to do that, and I had to learn that through trauma, and a girlfriend taught me that. Okay? We do tend even to shape our own feelings. Like, I should hate my husband because he did this to me. But you don't really. So you're mixing up, you're giving off mixed messages to yourself and to the rest of the world. In theory, I should hate you. Well, I just did not hate my husband. I loved him, even though he had done a very, very bad thing to me. So when I said to my girlfriend, what shall I do? She said, follow each emotion as it comes. She said, go any which way. I said, but one day I'm this way, one day. She said, one day hate and one day love him. Don't care. Now you see, I learned this from her. And that helped. So when you do have these feelings that are disturbing, because you don't think that they either shouldn't be there or why are they there, go with them. You see, instead of being afraid, or instead of trying to shape them because they don't seem to fit into the picture.
Yeah, I think I'm more afraid than anything.
Afraid, yeah. You know, let me tell you about one of my students and her tongue. One of the girls, I was talking to her about a loose tongue, and her tongue was very tight. And I said, what is the matter? What, you know, why can't you do? She said, well, I think that if I loosen it, I have a feeling that it's going to come out of my mouth. That it would go past my lips. And it was a real feeling, and it does make sense, doesn't it? That if you loosen something, it gets longer.
The other day I told Alice in my lesson that it felt somehow like something from back here was going to
fall
forward.
That's right.
It was falling forward.
And she was probably very pleased
to
hear
that. That's right.
Exactly, that was a deep loosening. Well, this student had the feeling that the front part of her tongue was going to slip out from between her teeth and her lips, and that would be ugly. So, since we were just in a lesson, why don't we try it? And why don't you let your tongue slip out just as far out of the mouth, and ugly as it is, who will see? Just me, and I'm your teacher. I do this all the time. So she did. She released the tongue, and she let it go just as loose as well. And it didn't go any further than nature's tongue is meant to go. And by letting it go the whole way, see, being afraid of it, and then by taking a chance and letting it go the whole way, the tongue didn't do anything other than what tongues do. So I think that's something that you have to try in this particular instance. You have to have free time, not too much, because that's not good. No, too much free time is not good.
Oh.
Yeah. But free time, you know, nice, normal, healthy amount of empty time. You have to have that, and you have to let whatever happens happen. If you cry, you cry. And see it through. I do think it is important to come and speak to someone about it. Otherwise, you can't clear up these thoughts. They kind of roll around in your head, and they assume more power and importance than they really have.
And then it gets in the way even more of anything else you're trying to do, like acting.
That's right. It does get in the way. Yeah. So, although we'll just have a chance maybe to go over your list of words today, I think what you wrote was insightful and very much so for you. The only thing is, when it's written on page, forget it now, okay? So I'd like you to tear these pages up. Good.
I didn't reread them.
Good. I'm glad you didn't. Yes, and I could tell that they were really honestly written, because even some of the words, like, grammatically didn't make sense. That's fine. That's what I want. That's real. Good. That means you're not shaping the material. Okay? This is not to be shaped. This is stuff that just pours out in chaotic fashion. Mm-hmm. Talking about chaotic fashion. Mm-hmm. In a sense, isn't that the feeling that we want to get in singing? When we want a kind of chaos in the voice, we want to give up control, and we think we're just letting it happen chaotically. But with training, it happens to fall into the right place, and the jaw hinge coordinates with the jaw, you know, the chin and the tongue coordinates with the teeth, and everything is coordinating in what is seemingly chaotic fashion.
Because you're not doing anything. I mean, it feels like you're not doing anything.
Exactly. So now you know what that means, not doing anything, for something to feel that you're not.
I sort of understand.
You sort of understand, like today, not doing anything means you won't shape your thoughts. You won't make the decision. You won't do anything. You won't make the decision that you have cried enough. It's not your decision to make.
Mm-hmm.
All right? So there, it's like two selves from somebody's book, self one and self two.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Is it self one? That's the self, and self two is the civilized self.
Right. The part that observes the other part.
That's right. And always telling it what to do, and doesn't leave it alone.
Uh-huh.
Okay. What we're saying is that self one will really cry and stop crying when it no longer wants to cry. Self two should not make the decision whether to cry or not to cry.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Self two what? Self two gets into the car and knows that on Sunday it comes here.
Mm-hmm.
Self one brings itself here and gives me the page and said, this is what I wrote.
Yes.
All right. Yeah. So let's talk about chaos a little bit more. We recognize it in singing. It means the desire that we all of us have to shape the work instead of letting it shape itself. Now, at one time, those words are so difficult to understand that you could just burst into tears then and there, trying to, what do you mean? I cannot do this.
No, I know what you mean.
Okay. Now, in acting, so singing, thinking, life, in acting, when I say, okay, Judy, why don't you get up and try that exercise? Do you know how suddenly you shape it, your ankles go stiff,
mm-hmm.
you do your zombie walk? That's shaping the exercise.
I know it is.
Okay, but now that we know it even a little deeper, because we came at it, you came at it, from an emotional, a personal emotional side. And we're saying you cannot shape, self two cannot shape that self one's emotional needs. Okay, nor can self two shape self one's getting up, exactly, self one's ankles getting up to walk to the door to do the exercise. You somehow have to let it do itself, right or wrong. Generally, the only times we're wrong is when self two gets in the way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I know that.
Uh-huh.
Here.
That's right, but you see, but you're beginning
so
to learn it.
It's hard to trust that self one is all right and can do things and is interesting and is, it's hard.
I think it's hard because you made a general statement. You made a large sweeping statement. Large sweeping statements scare the shit out of me.
Mm-hmm.
But let's bring it down. Let's bring that same sentence down to smaller mm-hmm. issue. Would you say that suppose you left here today, from the moment you got in your car, you were feeling something? Would you know when you began to shape that thought or when you began to let the feelings go? You wouldn't know?
Maybe.
Suppose tears came to your eyes. Would you know to let them come?
Mm-hmm.
After today's...
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you would know to let them come. You wouldn't then try to shape it? Would you say to yourself, oh, I shouldn't be doing this, or why am I doing this? You would just do
right.
it? Okay, so do you see how you learn, you really do know that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
All right.
So in that small, specific instance, you would not try to shape your feelings. You would let them go. Now tell me, what was the sentence that you said about how can I trust self-one?
Yeah.
So I'm not asking you to trust self-one. I'm not asking you to take it to the army. And,
no,
you know,
I'm asking myself.
That's right,
to do
you
that.
See. And that's not what we're saying. We're saying take it step by step. Why do you think I call my acting, you know, course the step-by-step method? You know, very glamorous title. Because you don't have to lead a whole army into the battle. All you have to do is sort of work on one tiny aspect. Right, that you understand. That's all you have to do. In singing, you know now that if the tongue has the feeling of falling forward, that you don't have to change that, right? You don't have to shape that back. You let it fall forward because you know it's okay. So you see, that's another tiny step where you know you don't have to. Self too doesn't have to get in the way and say, "Oh, this is not what's familiar to me. I don't like this feeling. It's new." Self too is going to shut up, okay? Yeah, because it knows. So do you see that little by little, you then begin to convince yourself, and 10 years from now, you look around and you say, "Do you know I really know how to let self one do it because I discovered that it does it well." That's 10 years from now, okay? When I was doing Molly Bloom and taking real time, that was the first time I ever took real time to let a thought move up into the mind. And as it moved up into the mind and somehow crested, I then let the sentence come out. We're not taught to do that. We're taught to, you know, be on cue and make the laugh line. To do that was one of the things that somehow moved me into my body and into my mind. But you see, that was 1973 or so. See how long it's been? 10 years. It took me to learn that thing that I learned 10 years ago. So it takes 10 to 15 years, Judy, 10 to 12 to 15 years, for this change to come about. And I think you're on the way.
Yeah, something's happening.
It sure is. Okay, let's stop now.
Okay.
And come next week, and unless you have more writing, we'll go to the tongue and the words. Yeah.
I think I just needed to do this first.
Yes, you did. This is good. But you see how much of an acting lesson we really ended up having? Yeah, it's. I mean, acting really is mental health. People don't know that. They think acting is fake, but it isn't. It's true.
It's why many of the good actors stay so alert and so interesting and energetic and way past the age that the average person would.
Yeah, that's true.
I was listening to Jimmy Stewart the other night. He's wonderful.
Oh, I should have turned that
just on. Charming and funny and interesting and aware of what's going on today in society and all those things. And he must be at almost 80 by now.
Is he that old? 80? 60?
He's over 75.
Between 75 and 80, surely.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he has a youthful quality.
Yeah, he does.
Isn't that amazing? And how wonderful to have your movies showing right now.
Oh.
And the hottest thing. Yeah. Isn't that terrific to not be washed up, finished?
But it's amazing how that happens.
Yeah. Good. I'm giving these to you to Terry.
I will.
Judy. All right.